Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the New Media Show. My name is Todd Cochran. I'm joined by my co-host, Mr. Rob Greenlee. Good morning, Rob. How are you?
Good. It's great to be here, Todd.
Well, I've
another day of podcast discussions and conversations, and hopefully we can be helpful, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And we have a mystery man in square number one. We're being joined today by Barry Kantz, the CFO and legal officer at Raw Voice. Of course, Raw Voice is the company that is that I'm involved with, that is the, I guess for better words, the purveyors of Blueberry PowerPress and all those tools. But Barry is only on audio today because Barry is one of those Americans that live in rural America. And for a better word, the bandwidth sucks. Good morning, Barry. How are you?
Yeah, good morning. And it certainly does. I wish there was something to do about it other than move, right? But I guess not. But it's, you know, it's sufficient enough to do a podcast. So that, I guess that's the main thing.
Yeah, that's a beauty. And of course, when you're on Skype, you're probably telling your wife, don't go surfing the net or anything, right?
Oh yeah, and I look at my little taskbar down there to make sure that something's not updating. If it does, you know, I'm done for. So,
well, it's it is something that is a lot more people have to deal with than what we oftentimes give credit, but talk about. I talk about it on my show a lot that. You know, I look at where my mom lives, and they're, you know, they have a Hughes dish and a wireless connection, and, you know, they're both bandwidth limited, and, you know, there's still people that live under significant restrictions, and it's just like that last mile or two or five that is the, you know, is the problem. I always told my mom, I said, if I ever, you know, move back to the mainland, if I ever move back to, you know, in the area where I grew up, so there's no way I could live on the homestead because I'd have to have a trenching machine put in, I'd have to pay $100,000 that fiber dropped.
You know, what's frustrating for me is that, we're out in the country, but just a few miles away, there's a small town of Coopersville, and they're laying fiber to the house as we speak.
Wow, that's great.
And it's just a couple miles away.
Yeah.
And yet you have, what, 2 megs down, 1 meg up if you're lucky?
Yeah, that would be a good day.
Yeah, I mean, if you're on a DSL connection, which a lot of people in the smaller communities around the country, that's the only access they have, and that's still over the copper phone lines.
Yeah, that's what I have, DSL.
Yep, and they have ramped up the bandwidth to some degree. It used to be a lot worse, but it's still nowhere near what's possible with cable. And really, as you kind of think about podcasting in this context, you know, it may be that the wireless cell phone connections that you get out in those areas is much better than your landlines, and that could be where things are moving to.
But you know, cell phones equal per gigabit costs, so
that's right. You know, it's all about the money.
Thing that Barry, that you'll be, you know, I've got two connections here, and I'm very spoiled to have two. Is that during the cable connection I have, and this is going to make Barry mad, 300 down, 20 up. And then,
that's just unfair.
And then on the telephone line, they've improved the telephone DSL here. And I don't know what they did to make it happen, but I'm now, 50 down. Three up on that connection, but that
off
used
of
to be
a copper connection.
Huh? Yeah, that good. Used to be the same connection speed that Barry had. It would be, you know, like three down if I'm lucky, maybe a meg up. So that, you know, so maybe at some point, Barry, they will upgrade their infrastructure, and you'll get, because what they were trying to do is the telephone company's trying to compete with the cable company. And because everyone's cutting their landlines, you know, they're getting out of the landline business. So that you got all that copper in the ground, they got to use it for something.
Well, thank you, Todd. You gave me a ray of hope today.
You need to, you know, what you need to do is call them and say, hey, why is in Hawaii Telecom on copper have these kinds of speeds and you guys can't do it? And really, it's about infrastructure and equipment. So, do you belong? Is your are you on like Frontier or somebody like that? Who's your
it's
actual
Frontier?
Oh boy, God help you.
Yes, I know. I have even been in contact with their corporate office out east.
Yeah, well, Frontier doesn't have a great reputation, so they Rob, what they do is they go around and buy copper that the Bells don't want anymore.
Oh, I see. Yeah, that's growing probably.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, we've talked about internet. But you know, maybe you're a podcaster. Maybe you're, you know, challenged with the same thing. Elsie, who works at Libsyn, she's got the same issue. You know, she doesn't. She lives up in the mountains somewhere and doesn't have good bandwidth. But yet she ekes out, and she can actually do video. She's lucky enough to be able to squeak that in. But sometimes her video looks grainy, and it's because of her connection. So, hey, today we wanted to talk about Barry. We can talk about your podcast, and we can talk about kind of your role at what you do with the company, and then we can also kind of talk some about the legal aspects that we see in podcasting, or maybe that you've had to advise us on before. Rob, did we have? I know that you talked about having another guest coming in another segment. Are we? Where are we at on that?
No, so, I guess that. That person I was going to have on declined.
Okay.
For a conflict reasons.
So, Barry, for those of you, those that don't know you, why don't you give them your 411 here?
Sure. Well, the story about how Todd and I got together is interesting, and I'll get into that. But I've been podcasting since February of 2005, doing a weekly show for the better part of 10 years. And the show is the Home Based Travel Agent Show, and it's a business-to-business show. I talk to travel agents about the travel trade and what's going on, and we talk with suppliers and all kinds of people, cruise lines, Alaska Convention and Business Bureau. It's a business-to-business, and we have a lot of fun doing it. I have a co-host, and that's Lorene Romero, who lives out in the San Francisco area. And, back when I started it, I was also listening to podcasts, actually listening to podcasts before I started my own show. And about the same time I was starting my own show, I was starting a travel agent business. And so I thought, what a better thing to do a show on than, talk about the process of starting a travel business. Anyhow, as we got into it and I was listening to shows, particularly the Geek News Central way back then, Todd put a call out for an attorney who might be interested in helping out starting a podcasting business. And I responded with an email, and we've been doing that ever since. So it's been fun. I created the corporation Raw Voice back in, when did we do that, Todd? Was that 2005 or 2006? I forget.
Yeah, it was July, maybe August, September of 2005.
Yeah, yep. And I've been advising and working with the corporation ever since, and facing some big challenges. The bigger challenge, I think, has been keeping Todd out of trouble.
Well, it's...
I'm saying that tongue-in-cheek, Todd.
and those that know our story know that everyone that originated with our company, with the exception of one, came from my audience, which is totally, and it's a story in itself. But, so we're a company that was based on podcasters. We were all podcasters in the beginning. And I think Brian was the only one that wasn't doing a show or had done a show. But, I think that here's my advice to anyone that's looking to start a business. If you can get a lawyer on the board of directors to be a partner, that's going to save you a lot of money over the years.
Yeah. And it could save your business from a lawsuit and save your business both.
But and, go ahead.
Yeah. And hopefully that continues to hold true for Raw Voice. Yeah.
So Barry, you're on your podcast, you're up to 359 episodes. And who do you now, you know, who do you talk to these days then on that show? You know, what's the, you know, is the show morphed, or is it still basically the same show it was in the beginning?
Oh yeah, it's morphed quite a bit. Well, you know, I go back and listen to the first few shows, and it was pretty rough. And I'm sure anyone that has produced a podcast would probably feel the same way if they listen to their early shows too. But we, you know, we've definitely morphed, and we've turned into primarily an interview show. Again, like I said, we bring on industry leaders in the travel industry, and primarily speak to travel agents and those people who are interested in becoming travel agents. And people are probably sitting out there scratching their head thinking, who uses a travel agent? But you'd be surprised.
Yeah.
A lot of people use travel agents. Travel agents specialize in various product areas, and they have a depth of knowledge that an individual just, you can't get that by searching the web. You know, if you want to do a riverboat cruise or even go to Alaska, you know, there has to be some depth of knowledge, someone there to help you out to get the best value for your vacation dollar. And people use travel agents for that reason, and it hasn't gone away.
Yeah, I've got a buddy here in Hawaii who, you know, Hawaii's his market, and that's all he, you know, he specializes in. You know, in matter of fact, he's morphed a business where not only is he the travel agent, but he also provides like Jeeps and, you know, to do off-road utility stuff. And, you know, so he actually is not only doing the travel agent, but a service portion, including, I think he's even do Airbnbs, bought a couple of properties, and actually has, you know, he rents houses. So he's really went, and I think, and he's had to do that because the industry's changed a lot. But, you know, he's driving a Tesla, so he must be doing something right.
That's always a good sign, right, when you're driving a Tesla.
Yeah, he bought a Tesla and a boat the same year, and I thought to myself, the Tesla's a good investment, the boat, oh boy. They said, you really know it? You know, a boat is just nothing more. You just throw 100 at every day.
Oh, yeah, it's just a money pit. That's what those things are.
So, Barry, you know, we've, and Rob, I'm sure you've seen podcasters in the past make big mistakes in their shows and you kind of cringe. But, you know, one thing that I do, Barry, on my personal podcast at Geek News Central, I go after companies a lot. And there's a fine line between libel and opinion. So, you know, do you have some general suggestions to podcasters? So if they've got you know, someone that they want to, you know, not talk negatively about, or if they want to talk about a certain situation, you know, the rule I've had, and maybe you can back me up here, and maybe this isn't the golden rule, but I always follow up a rant with, in my opinion.
I'm not sure that's a defense to.
Yeah, that's true.
Actually, the best defense is the truth.
Right.
And if you're speaking the truth, then you have a nice defense. But,
right,
you know, that doesn't mean much because you can still get sued, and then it's your burden to bring forth your defense of proving that it was true what you said.
Right.
So, you know, the best rule of thumb is that, boy, only go negative if you really, really have to. Otherwise, try to keep it on a positive note or don't say anything at all.
Yeah, or just say you're running for president. You can basically get away with anything.
You went there. I didn't.
That's true. That's not a partisan comment. That applies to both sides.
Yeah.
So you know, broadcasters, though, usually they've had, you know, a television stations, they've had stuff vetted by the legal department if they're going to go after someone. So, you know, they're usually on pretty safe ground, but most podcasters don't have a legal department to say, can I say this in this way?
Well, you know, you take a television station, you know, they have a staff of journalists, and they're not going to go on the air with something unless they have probably three sources that corroborate the story that they're going to do. If the story, you know, defames, libels someone. you know, they're going to have their ducks in a row, and they're, you know, they're ready to prove the truth. And, you know, that's probably the best way to do it, is if you're out there digging dirt, you ought to follow some journalistic principles, you know, along the way.
And I think oftentimes the stuff that I'm talking about is stuff that's in the news. So there's usually multiple sources of news, maybe not original, but if, you know, if you've got, you know, information about practices a company's doing, I think, you know, when it comes to maybe a product, you know, you can have an opinion on a product and state your opinion on a product. You can state your, in my opinion, at least I state my opinion on organizations all the time. The RIAA used to be the company I used to have a good battering ram on. It was like a daily, and on every show I was talking about some of the stupid stuff they were doing. But I just wonder, I don't think there's been maybe a few. Do you remember if we've had any libel suits in the podcasting space?
You know, mainly I focus on our network, and I don't recall anyone, you know, within the world of Blueberry and Raw Voice that's had a problem.
But we have had issues come up in regards to copyright. Matter of fact, that happens on a generally regular, not a regular basis, but periodically. And we actually put up a blog post about fair use and copyright, and maybe talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, there's a lot of misunderstanding around, especially music, I think is where most of the issue is.
Well, you know, there's two issues when it comes to intellectual property that really, the one issue sets me on fire, and that's when a podcaster, when they don't read the terms of use when they sign up for a podcasting service, they kind of go into it blind, and then all of a sudden they discover that they've given up all their intellectual property rights. Now, this isn't happening much anymore. I think I've only seen it once, maybe in the last year or so. But, you know, as a podcaster, you want to make sure that, you know, you're putting in a lot of hard work and a lot of time producing a podcast and making it great and good and developing a brand and an audience. You don't want to sign up for a service that's going to take all of your intellectual property away, take your brand away, take your rights to reuse your content or reproduce it. You don't want to lose all that. And some people just blindly go into stuff, into an agreement, and sign their intellectual property rights away. And that, when a company does that to a podcaster, that fires me up. And I wrote a blog post about it. I don't know, maybe it's been about a year ago, maybe not quite so long ago, because I discovered a company out there, a new company that was doing exactly that. And, we put the blog post on the Blueberry blog, but that bothers me, that type of thing. So hopefully, you know, as a podcaster, when you go into these things, read those terms of use. You don't want to give up your hard work to someone else. And again, fortunately, like I said, a lot of the companies aren't doing that anymore, but it's still, you know, you have to keep your eye out for it.
And I think too, it's, we've been very sensitive to it because in the very, you know, if those that are coming into the space now have, you know, they just don't understand what has transpired in the past. But in the early days of podcasting, and these companies are no longer around, and a lot of the shows that were great shows that were associated with those companies are no longer around because of this very exact issue. You had a company that said, hey, come on over here. We've got this deal for you. We're going to pay you. And they got paid for a couple of years, and then the business didn't, you know, advance the way they thought it was going to. And when the, you know, the host decided they were going to leave, the company said, oh, "Whoops, no, we own your show," and you know, it ended up being pretty. It was just an undercurrent thing that you know, a dozen, two dozen shows really kind of got screwed. Some of them are still in existence today. They were able to get out and, you know, get their brand back. But Rob, you were here for that. You remember that. Mm-hmm. It was pretty ugly in some instances, wasn't it?
Yeah. And I think we were kind of alluding to this in a prior episode. We were just talking about how it just doesn't feel like there's as many kind of pain points or friction points in the industry like there used to be in the past. I think the most recent one that I can think of was the whole spin up around Stitcher caching, and playing ads around content, on their podcasting platform. And that was really the last controversy that I think got podcasters all riled up after a certain platform. And I think that's probably a good sign, I guess. I'm not sure, I've been trying to figure out what's going on in this industry here over the last 6 months or so. Things have changed a lot. But I do see that there just isn't as much kind of spin up and controversy on things as much anymore. And I guess it's a good sign. I haven't seen you get all riled up too much here recently about anything, and that's usually a good sign for me.
Well, I think the last one was a site that's still out and it's existing, that is operating, as Barry alluded to, not so nice. But in most of the content creators that are, and I don't see a lot of content creators going over there. I'm kind of watching it in the, the back channels to see what happens.
Did you want to say who it is?
I guess I would rather not, but,
gotcha.
I think there was enough. They're not making much spin in the space right now, but, I don't know if it's because they haven't been marketing or what, but they definitely, the terms of service of those were, with that particular service, was very erroneous.
So you're talking about a hosting platform of some sort, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And Barry wrote this article in November of 2014. It's on the PowerPress podcast site. It's called Podcasters Beware of Signing Your Rights Away. And it goes into exactly what, Barry is saying here. But, I think just what you need to do with any service, and I encourage people when they sign up for our service, read the terms of service. And we try to write them in such a way that I understand them. And if I can understand them, then, I think a fifth grader can. So,
Todd, let's talk about what the potential pitfalls of being with a platform like what you're talking about being concerned about your rights, is that centered around owning the content or being able to move it, or what is, because most people, let's back up at the high level and say, sure. Most people, when they produce a podcast, they have the recordings that's on their local computers. Right. They upload it to a service. Those get hosted and distributed for them or hosted. Is the danger that you can't move off of that platform, or is it getting tied up into a contract that you can't get out of, or is it, what are those real danger zones that a podcaster needs to look out for, do you think?
I'll let Barry go into that.
Yeah.
Well, I think the big one is that you're locked into a contract, and the company that you're locked into is providing advertising on your show. Mm-hmm. And you may not be able to share in the revenue of that because the company has taken away your legal right to do so through their terms of use. And I think that's that's a part of it. But also the other part are the ones that you just mentioned, and that you can't move your show. You can't repurpose it. You can't change it. You don't own your branding. So if you want to go out and promote your show on another network or another directory, technically, according to the terms of use, you can't do that because that branding no longer belongs to you. Mm-hmm. So you're locked in. If you want to continue your show, and we've seen this happen with a few shows, if you want to continue your show, you're going to have to totally continue it.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes move it to with a different name.
Yeah, you have to rebrand it. You have to change everything and basically start all over again. Of course, good talent is good talent. You can move your talent, but you can't move your branding. And it's a lot of work to creating a good brand.
And fortunately, I think there's only one instances of this and, very heinous, in my opinion, activity going on. But I think most podcasters, again, they'll utilize the service not really knowing what the terms are and, you know, what the restrictions are. We get calls all the time from podcasters on certain platforms, and they want to do advertising deals. And I said, well, have you asked your hosting provider if you have permission to do so? And they're like, what do you mean? And I'm like, well, technically, the terms of service you've signed with that hosting provider, you have to ask them permission to run advertising on other sites. And they're flabbergasted. They're what do you mean? And I'm like, no, that's their terms. Yeah, did you read the terms? And they don't. And they don't even know that. They don't even know that they're by the terms that they are restricted from running advertising on the show unless they ask permission of their hosting provider, which is, and for the record, we don't have those types of erroneous type of agreements. The only agreement that we basically make with podcasters and advertising is that if I've got you in a deal, that you don't just, the next quarter go run off and talk to that individual directly. We want to be able to retain the relationship we have with a vendor and have, we brought that advertiser to you. We don't want you to go running direct to that advertiser for a certain period of time. But, that's just protecting our business. But it's also, we're going to be running advertising your show. And if you stop advertising that particular vendor and you come to me several months later, I generally will say, yeah, it's okay. Go ahead. And if you want to talk to them direct, you can. I'm not so hard-nosed on that. But I think what you end up, and this is only after you've run. And a matter of fact, Barry, I think we've even loosened those terms up. It's only after you've run an ad deal with us, with a specific vendor. There's nothing else that's restricting. You can do whatever you want.
Yeah, we did loosen those up quite a bit.
Yeah.
Because, our goal has always been that, you own what you create.
Right.
And that's the way it should be.
Yeah, we don't, and again, first and foremost, Rob, the team is podcasters, and we understand these pain points. But you got to understand that most of the hosting companies that are out there today, they don't do a podcast. And you don't even know who's behind, and largely you don't even know who's behind the business.
Yeah.
You got companies that are based out of China. You got companies that are overseas. You don't know who the parties are. They just offer a service. I think that the major podcasting companies are out there, then people know who they are, have relationships with the podcasters. I think that's important. It's these newcomers that are coming on, the suits that are coming on, that need to understand there's some sensitivities there.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about this on the show last week. There's just fewer and fewer new people coming into the space that are actually coming into it from any experience in podcasting specifically. I mean, a lot of them are coming into it with a lot of experience in radio,
right?
Which in some ways is applicable, in some ways is kind of taking them down the wrong path. I agree. But I have to say a lot of the more established companies that are in this medium are pretty aware of the sensitivities and what's right for podcasters and giving them the flexibility to quickly move if they need to and own all those rights and not have onerous terms of service. And you can have advertising contracts that are not locked into doing onerous things to the content provider,
Yeah. So, but I every content creator that's listening to the show, maybe should go back and read the terms of service of the organization they're working with or hosting with
just to make sure.
Yeah, just to make sure. Know what you're really allowed to do or not allowed to do, or if you have to ask permission or not. And I think some of you may be surprised, to be honest with you.
If you don't want to go through the whole terms of service, which is probably a good idea, but if you just want to focus on what your rights are in terms of keeping your own property, look under the paragraph headings that are entitled intellectual property.
Yeah.
Yeah, and drink a Red Bull before you start.
Like I said, Rob, we wrote ours so that you don't need a Red Bull. You need a one quarter of a cup of coffee. That's all you need. Hey, Barry, going back to the copyright stuff, I'm seeing now blatantly where podcasters are doing music shows, they just don't care. They're running everything and anything in those music shows. And I don't know if anybody's gotten sued yet. Maybe those shows haven't been big enough to blip the radar, but.
Well, I hear about shows that get asked to stop.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's not a huge thing, but I do hear about them. Yeah. Anyway, go ahead, Barry. You were going to say something about that.
Yeah, you know, it'll happen. If you're taking someone else's property and using it on your show and not using it under the fair use doctrine, you're going to get a letter to take it down, and you could get sued. You know, and there's a lot of misconceptions out there about the fair use doctrine.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not even sure that's even much of a protection in actuality, right?
Well, you know, it's not a people perceive it not as much of a protection because there's not a bright line when it comes to fair use.
Yeah.
You know, if you walk into a convenience store and take an apple off the shelf and put it in your pocket and walk out, you know, that there's a bright line there. You know, we know that you've stolen that apple. But if you take intellectual property, somebody else's creation, and use it in your work, there is no bright line there. And that's a good thing. And the reason that's a good thing is because we have the First Amendment. You have the right to free speech. And if the government restricted your right to only talk about things that you create, there wouldn't be a whole lot to talk about. And we wouldn't be able to move our culture forward. We wouldn't be able to transmit, you know, ideas within our own culture. So the fair use doctrine tries to, you know, it's a balancing act. It tries to balance, you know, your right to free speech to the property rights of a content creator, a copyright holder. So that's why it's perhaps perceived as, you know, not being of much use. But really it is.
And there's really, as you wrote in another article that we put up, it's a balancing act based on four factors, right?
Yeah, there's four factors. But let me get into a couple of the big myths of copyright before I talk about the four factors. One of the big myths is that, well, I can use someone else, I can use bumper music, and I can use copyrighted bumper music, you know, in my show, and it's okay as long as I only use 7 seconds or less, or whatever the number that people pick out of the air. There is no magic number. You can't use someone else's property for bumper music, regardless of the time frame, unless they grant you, you know, a Creative Commons right to use it, and that could be a whole separate show, Creative Commons licensing. Or they give you explicit permission to use that portion of music for your bumper music. That's one of the big myths. There's no magic time frame, no magic amount of time.
And believe it or not, it's actually easier to get a license to do bumper music than it is to do anything else. You usually can get, you're going to pay, but you usually can get a bumper license. Yeah, a bumper music license.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
And the other big myth is, well, I don't have to worry as long as my, you know, I'm not making money on my show. I'm not a commercial venture, so it's okay if I take other people's content and use it on my show. And that is not true. It does matter. It doesn't matter whether you're making money or not. It doesn't matter whether your operation's commercial or nonprofit. You still can't take another person's property, copyrighted property, and use it on your show. So those are probably the two biggest myths that we would likely run into in the world of podcasting.
So Barry, when it, you know, oftentimes though, I will, and for me, I have difficulty because I stream live on YouTube. So if I take any video and I want to run, let's say I want to run a video segment and then talk about it. YouTube is so strict these days, and they have their stuff dialed in so tight that if I run a piece almost from anybody during when I'm live, and I actually put it up on the live stream, even if it's if I do a window-on-window Doesn't matter how I frame it, they'll shut the stream off. They'll just lock it out. They're that good. So I've got the point where I can't even, if I want to talk about some video, and let's say it's a news item or something like that, I just have to talk about it now, especially when I'm live streaming, because of the logarithms that YouTube uses. Now, if I was streaming on my own server, I could probably play that video, get the context from what I wanted to talk about the video, talk about the news item or talk about the topic, and relate back to it. My point under a fair use doctrine, I'm relatively safe, but even in YouTube's eyes, they say no, they don't allow it at all.
That's their right. It's their business. They have the right to do that. But, it's really unfortunate because, again, what we want to have fair use accomplish is to allow people to criticize and comment on, on particularly news stories or other matters. Mm-hmm. And some of those comments and criticisms do our society good. They advance the culture. In your case, you're reading news stories and And the reason it's fair use is because you're adding your own commentary to it, and that makes it fair use. If you were simply reading the news story, then you would have a big problem with copyright infringement. But once you start commenting on it, or criticizing it, or maybe creating a parody from it, then you fall into that realm of fair use.
Well, you're creating a new work of it is what you're doing.
Exactly. You're transforming
it. It's not a copy of it. Yeah.
Yep. You're transforming the original.
Yep.
Yep.
So, and I think that what we're talking about here is fairly restricted. I mean, mostly at least from technological crackdown, fairly limited to video, right? It's not so much audio. So if you wanted to capture like maybe a clip from another podcast, play it on your show and then comment about it, there's probably, you're probably more free to do those kind of things, I would imagine.
Well, if you are
word stuff,
and I think the key here is, and this is what most content creators really look at is, it's just like, if you've ever written a college paper, what do you have to do when you quote something? You have to cite and you have to put the reference of where that information came from. So anytime that I talk about a news item, and let's say I'm talking from Huffington Post, I'll say I've got this Huffington Post here article entitled such and such, and you let me read this paragraph to you, and I read the paragraph, and then I make my comments about it, and then I say, I'll have the link back to Huffington Post's original article in the show notes that you can go look at to see the source material. So I think the key to most...
Well, let me stop you right there, Todd, because that's another myth, actually.
Right.
Citing the work is not required within the copyright law. There is nothing in the statute that says that you have to cite the original author of the work.
Huh.
I mean, it's nice that you're doing that, Todd, though.
Yeah, actually, it's great. It's good journalistic practice to cite.
Yeah.
And any college student knows that if you take someone else's work and use it in a paper and you don't cite it, you're in trouble. You could lose your seat there at the school.
Right.
But there's nothing in the copyright law that says that you have to cite another person's work. That does not create fair use just because you've cited it.
Well, maybe then that's a good practice.
it is a good practice. I think it, it also applies a little bit, maybe some credibility to discussing that story as well. So
yes,
I think it helps the audience have some deeper credibility context.
It also helps you too in the fact that a lot of people, if you're going to cite their if you're going to use their work under fair use in what you produce, and you give them a link back, you cite it, they're probably happy that you're doing that, and they're not going to bother you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it really, it's just,
it's a bit of protection too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
But there are folks that have done parodies that, that people get. That's the risk on parodies and rants. Someone still can say screw it. I'm going to go sue this. You never, you know, if you get under someone's skin, you know, you know, God help you, you're still going to get the lawyer letter. You know,
in our country, you can get sued anytime,
especially if you're throwing insults or if you're defaming somebody in a vicious way that's not respectful. Yeah, that's where you get in trouble, I think.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think we've talked around it a little bit, but Barry, are there, you know, you specifically cite the four-factor balancing test. Can you go into that at all? And I know you don't have the piece in front of you. Do you want me to read what you originally wrote?
No, I think I can get into the four factors a little bit. Again, I'm not an intellectual property attorney, but you know, having spent enough time with some of these issues at Raw Voice, I've got an idea. And I also want to let podcasters know, and you know, this is the typical lawyer disclaimer, that if you have a question about your content, the best thing to do, and I highly encourage it, is to have an attorney look at your content and get an opinion, because each piece of content is different, and the four factors may apply differently to your particular content. So, you know, just from this general discussion, you can't, you know, really use it for legal advice, I guess, is the bottom line here.
Rob, don't you just love lawyers?
I know, it's great, isn't it? But it's all totally expected. I mean, it's like, oh, yeah, wow. You know, it's like, yeah, that's what they should do.
Go ahead, Barry, I'm sorry.
So, you know, the big one that we talked about was, you know, the purpose and the character of use. And the big one of the four factors is it transformative? Yeah. What you did with your piece that you're going to publish, the podcast that you're going to put out, did it transform the original work? You know, and that's going to be the primary factor. Did your comment or your criticism or your parody on it, did it transform it? The other piece is the nature of the copyrighted work. And by that, I mean, are you taking from a piece of fiction and using it in your podcast or your video cast? Well, fiction is going to have a little higher standard than a factual story in terms of fair use. Mm-hmm. So the bottom line is you're more likely to get in trouble using a piece of fiction in your work versus using a news story. So you know, if you have a show that talks about Lost, and you're the show Lost, which there was a big podcast about that at one time, but mm-hmm. you know, if you're using clips and pieces of the show Lost in your podcast, you're more likely to run into a copyright infringement problem than if you were taking a news story. I hope I'm making that clear.
Yeah. Wow. So the standard is much harder or much higher when it comes to fiction, because what they've really done is they've created a story to begin with. Wow. Makes sense in a backwards kind of way, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's more of a creative work. It's not a reporting situation, right?
Yeah, you know, an event that happens out there on the street is an event, and it's happened, and a lot of people have seen it, and it's not creative. But if I'm writing a television series, you know, that's totally creative, and that has a higher protection than, you know, what that event was that happened out on the street.
And this goes back to, and really the reason we put this fair use out is we had reports and content creators coming to us crying that their media on their hosting provider that they were on was being pulled down, that their content was just arbitrarily being pulled, and it was because they ran a 20-second audio file and the particular host that they were with deemed that to be infringement and pulled that down, and that company claimed that they're a podcast host. So we wanted to make it very, very clear that, and you know, every company is going to be different on their stance on this, but we absolutely respect copyright law. And we also respect fair use and its necessity and value mm-hmm. when used properly within content creator shows. I think that, you know, because this comes from the, again, from the aspect that we're content creators first, and our business is podcasting. Our business isn't music. Mm-hmm. Our business is, you know, storytellers. And we don't have a conflict of interest with a music from, you know, with artists. And some services do. And those services, because they've already been sued, they're already having issues with licensing. They are very hypersensitive to anyone putting any type of media in their content, audio or video, otherwise, that yeah. is, you know, 5 seconds, 10 seconds, doesn't matter. Their algorithm says you're infringing, pull it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's too bad. You know, another piece under the nature of the work is, was the work that you're going to use in your podcast, was it published or unpublished? And here's what's surprising. If it's unpublished, it has higher protection, has higher copyright protection. So if you're using a published work, you can, you know, more easily fall under that rubric of fair use. But if it's unpublished, you know, look out. Because the idea there is that you might scoop somebody on their unpublished work. You might destroy their market for that unpublished work.
Mm-hmm. So would that be getting a hold of, let's say, a manuscript, or that would be...
Yeah, before it was actually officially published, right?
Yeah, one of the famous cases, at least famous here in our area here in West Michigan, was from the autobiography of Gerald Ford. And somebody got the unpublished manuscript for that autobiography, and they published 300 words or so that had to do with, I think it had to do with the Nixon tapes or something. But that was the whole reason that someone would have wanted to read the autobiography of Gerald Ford is for those 300 words.
It
basically destroyed the market for that autobiography. So the idea is that a published work will have an easier time of applying fair use to a public work versus an unpublished work.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It does make sense. Because
you podcasters out there that think you might be scooping something, you know, be careful.
Yeah. And I'm even careful with, you know, I've heard an announcement is coming on something and it's newsworthy. And I'm like, even though I may not have been asked to observe basically a blackout period, you know, not, and there's another word for it and it's slipping my brain here.
NDA?
No, not NDA. It's, they basically, you know, when you, sometimes companies will send you press releases before they're on the street and
it's an embargo.
Embargo. Yeah. You know, and sometimes you get that and you've agreed to it, but sometimes stuff falls in your lap that maybe is under embargo with someone else and you maybe shouldn't have it because you haven't been asked permission. Even, you know, someone's done you a favor and sent to it and you're like, oh man, I need to sit on this and wait. So, you know, that's the risk you run. And, you know, that's what happens with, you know, product announcements. You look at, you know, everyone's always trying to scoop Apple with the, you know, finding out what they're going to announce. And, you know, if you get some hard documented evidence, an official Apple document or procedure, or let's say you could really run the risk then of the hound dogs attacking you in a big, big way, you know. Especially with a big company like Apple, it's a multi-billion-dollar rollout of a product, you know, not millions, billions. you don't want to be underneath the scrutiny of Tim Cook's legal team. You know, that's not going to end well for you.
yeah,
be careful with that scoop. Yeah. You know, then you know, coming to the third factor is how much of the original work was taken for your use, and you know, it's, was it more than necessary to produce your comment, criticism, or parody? Did you use more than you really needed to? So the idea is that you only use just enough to make your point or to make your comment, and that's all. And the fourth factor is, what impact on the market will your use of that copyrighted material have? And if you have a large impact on that, the copyright owner's ability to sell his product, or you're undercutting their ability to sell their product, then, you know, fair use is not going to apply, not necessarily.
Yeah.
So those are the basic four factors. And, you know, the myths are there's no magic number for the amount of time that you can use copyrighted material, like a 6-second bumper or whatever. And you don't have to cite, but that's always a good idea. And it doesn't matter if you're commercial or non-commercial, all the same rules apply. So those are the four factors and some of the major myths, I guess, that are out there that we have to watch for and think about. And fair use is necessary, and we should protect our right to use fair use because it's important in our culture.
If we didn't have fair use, there wouldn't be reporting on, you know, politicians would completely exempt on, it's, you know, it's a basis upon
our democracy.
Right.
Yeah. It is a foundation of our democracy, being able to do those kinds of things.
And believe
interesting, and I haven't read the court case, but I've seen some headliners about it, that recently there was a court case that says, well, fair use is not a defense to copyright infringement, which it always has been. Mm-hmm. It is, fair use is a right. Now, if you think of those two distinctions, you know, if I'm sued for copyright infringement, I can use it as a defense to defend my use. But now the courts are saying it's a right. In other words, it's a right that falls under, you know, your First Amendment right rather than a defense. So it has a higher status than just a simple defense you use after you get sued.
But at the same time, Barry, a lot of companies are really trying to suppress fair use. They don't want their works talked about, partially played, anything. And it's, you know, mostly music.
It's control.
Yeah,
you know, podcasters, and I'm one of them. You know, I don't have a lot of money to fight a takedown notice, and,
right?
You know, but one of the things that you can do is, if you get a takedown notice and you want to defend your fair use rights, you can go to a federal district court and you can take the case to the court yourself and ask for a declaratory judgment. You can ask the judge in your local federal district court to declare that your use is a fair use. So, you know, you have a means to protect your fair use rights.
And that doesn't always apply. You know, we're talking about media creation. My ownership of the Cochrane News Network podcast, CNNpodcast.com, that's a whole different topic area for discussion.
That's trademark.
So the Cochrane News Network podcast, CNNpodcast.com, which I received a terse legal letter to turn it over or else. that wasn't worth the fight. It was aggravating and it made for some fun discussion points, but I'm no longer the owner of that that domain.
The proud owner has it now.
Yes, and I haven't even looked if they've started using it again. So I shouldn't even promote them for they're kind of on my news blackout list right now. Let's see if they actually pointed it anywhere.
Yeah, I have to say, no. I mean, it is surprising that there isn't more kind of legal stuff going on in the podcasting space. It just, I just don't know, you know, that it's very difficult, I think, for companies and corporations and brands to monitor 300,000 audio podcasts and, you know, and check up on all this stuff to make sure that everybody's, you know, adhering to the strict copyright laws. And I think that's a lot of the reason why you see a lot of, you know, music podcasts are out there doing it. And because I just don't think that the music labels are really focused on trying to crack down on it. But it does happen, you know. So you are running a risk if you're going to be playing full track,
yeah,
popular music in your podcast, that somebody's going to find out about it and send you a cease and desist.
You know, I think from, you know, we went through and done everything that we need to do as a company wise to, you know, comply with, you know, if someone requests something to be taken down, you know, we've got our process in place. But if, you know, we very rarely, what would you say, Barry, a couple times a year get requests for media to be taken offline?
It doesn't happen.
Maybe not even that much. Probably once a year. You know, yeah. It seems to come in groups.
Yeah.
I had it happen maybe 3 or 4 times in the 6 years that I worked on the Zune podcasting platform.
And
you take something down.
And usually it's not even a copyright issue. Usually it's some author or some individual who has said something that maybe they've had a change of opinion or were embarrassed that they said and said it in the heat of the moment, and all of a sudden say, maybe I don't want that out there anymore.
Well, you know, that brings up an interesting point that the podcaster should probably know about. And that is, if you do an interview on your show, what the interviewee talks about and what the interviewee says belongs to them as a copyright. That's their material. What you say on your show and the questions that you ask of the person you're interviewing, that is your copyright. So all of a sudden you have in your show two different copyright owners. You're the person you're interviewing and you, the interviewer or the producer of the show. Mm-hmm. So if you really want to be safe, you have a form, you know, a legal form saying that the interviewee releases their rights to their copyright for the interview of that show.
Yeah, and some shows do that. I've signed many of those over the years. Yeah,
I find it annoying when I have to sign them, but yeah, I've got them too.
Well, and trade shows do it too. You know, yeah. The New Media Expo had us sign something like that, and same with the Podcast Movement guys.
Yeah,
as I recall.
So we don't do those. And I just basically, if I have I have had interviews where, and it happens at trade shows, this is where I get it personally. Mm-hmm. You know, we're doing 240 interviews. And what will happen is a spokesperson will give the wrong information. They'll say something that was incorrect. And they'll come back later and say, oh my God, I screwed up on this. Can you pull this interview? and I'll try to work with them. Okay, why are we pulling it? What was the segment that was you were worried about? If I re-edit it and pull that piece, will you be happy? And oftentimes that'll suffice. But I just maintain a policy. If a interviewee asks me to take their content down, I typically will. I don't usually go back. And I may have one of those a year that happen, and it's because they've said something. And trade shows are funny too, because oftentimes when you go into a booth, the bigger the booth, the harder it is to find someone to talk to, because specific people have been given permission to talk to the press. Yeah. And, you know, you try to get someone else that's, you know, maybe some of those folks are day labor, and they don't want, you know, it's just a pretty girl standing in the booth. It's not, as you know, they're not a spokesperson. So you just have to navigate that. That's why I hate going into big booths at events, because I know it's going to take forever to get in and get out. 10x10, usually the guy that's given the permission to speak is the guy that owns the company, and he's standing there in front of you. So we've never run into that with our company. We're all about talking, so everyone can talk.
Yeah. Well, you know, over the years, we've had a couple of takedown requests from interviewees to remove a podcast from the Blueberry Network because the interviewee didn't want it on there anymore.
Right. That's usually the request. It's very rarely, it's actually about copyright it's someone maybe is embarrassed with the interview or don't want to be associated with an individual anymore. We've seen that. So, but again, very rare.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, I guess that's a, maybe that's a sign, Rob, that podcasters are doing a good job, or maybe they're flying under the radar.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Definitely. I think so.
So very, you know, you've seen the space and, you know, you've watched, you know, you get my information on articles, and I'm always looking for stuff, and, you know, we're talking as a team, but from your perspective, you know, been in the space really since the beginning, since, you know, 2005. And by the way, congratulations. It looks like you've made it 10 years.
Yes, I have. More than 10 years now.
Yeah. So what's your feelings about where the space is headed right now and what's going on?
Well, you know, 10 years ago, it was a technical endeavor to produce a podcast, a very technical endeavor. And over the years, producing a podcast is becoming less technical, even though it still is fairly technical. But, you know, companies out there are doing things to make it easy to create the podcast. And I think we're moving in that direction. What I'd love to see would be to have people focus on their creative talents and not so much have to worry about the technical talents. And I think that's a goal of a lot of people in the space. Mm-hmm. We're not there yet. In fact, I think we're a ways from it, but that's where I'd like to see it go, and that's from where I've seen it come.
What about these new players jumping in? Any thoughts on, you know, everyone's getting on the bandwagon right now?
Well, it kind of reminds me of probably old television shows that I saw when I was a kid, giving away how old I am here, but, you know, you got the guy standing on the back of a horse-drawn wagon selling medicine. what do we call those? Snake oil salesmen?
Right.
We have a lot of people jumping into the space thinking that they're going to get rich quick. And and they're hawking their products and being pretty loud and vocal about it and telling you that they can make you rich in 48 hours. You know, I'm exaggerating, but maybe not too much. But, you know, they're throwing all this stuff out and that's not right. It's not true. And they are snake oil. And you have to watch out for those folks, I think.
Mm-hmm. Now, those kind of endeavors have been pursued for many decades, right? So...
Yeah.
The buyer beware is the only real protection from that kind of stuff.
Exactly. Yep. You know, it existed back in the wagon days, the horse-drawn wagon days, and now we've just moved the technology forward, and we're seeing it in the podcast space.
Yeah.
It reminds me of the door-to-door salesman that would come in with a real slick appearance and fast talking, and you know from the get-go that the guy is largely selling, well, the stuff that comes out of horses' rear ends. And there may be some utility to some of it, but, it's like that guy, and I shouldn't use a vacuum cleaner salesman analogy, but that guy comes to your house with that, and I don't think this happens anymore. The guy comes to your house with a vacuum cleaner. And somehow, when he walks out the door, some people have paid $3,000 for a vacuum cleaner that they could have went to down the street and got for $265 at Best Buy. And they know that they've gotten a great vacuum cleaner, but they just don't quite know why. and they're not about to tell their friends that they just spent $3,000 on a vacuum cleaner. Because then they would
talk about a Kirby by chance.
I'm not using any vacuum cleaner company's names in this show, but then you get my point here. You know, it's some people get into systems that they later will be like, wow, why did I do that? Did this thing really work better than the $265 Walmart? The vacuum at Walmart.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, it's funny that you're talking about that because I had a Kirby salesman at my door here yesterday.
Really?
Oh. Yeah.
They still exist.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Oh, that's actually funny.
I bought a Kirby like 15 years ago. I still have it.
Rob.
I know.
The 3000 it was $1,200 Kirby you bought. You were on their list.
This is a long time ago I bought it and still use it today. You know, 16 years later, it's still kicking. So,
those things really are like tanks.
They are good vacuum cleaners, I have to say. There's nothing wrong with them. They're just very expensive.
And now we're going to start a new show, the Kirby Show.
But it just seems so funny that I just went through that and then you guys started talking about it.
It's funny.
One thing that I do want to mention, and it's been said before, but if you want to be a successful podcaster, you have to talk about what you're passionate about.
Right.
Yeah. You don't get into this to make tons of money, and it's rare that people get in this and make tons of money. Some people do, but it's rare. Yep. But it's a creative work. It's fun. You should have fun doing it. You should enjoy researching your topic, and you should enjoy talking about your topic. Yep. You know, it's a passion.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, and I keep saying this more and more and more. We need more storytellers.
Yes.
I'm not tuning in to hear your guest. I'm tuning in to hear you.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, yeah, exactly. And hey, Todd, did you want to talk about a couple of interesting podcast stories that I've discovered?
Sure.
It's not so much about platforms as much as it is around content.
Okay.
But it appears... Adam Carolla may be replacing Howard Stern on Sirius.
What?
Yeah. So that's the current scuttlebutt that's out on the web right now. It says Adam Carolla appears to be the heir apparent to Howard Stern's satellite empire. That's that was an article just from yesterday.
Oh my God! Because Howard Stern has been. Howard Stern, for those that don't know,
hates podcasting. But you know he's going to wind up being one.
He's going to end up eating his words. Oh my goodness. Howard Stern would have an incredible audience as a podcast, but is Howard's numbers going down? Is that the word? Is that what's happening?
Well, his contract is up for renewal here, and the discussion is sliding Mr. Carolla in there.
Okay, this is a ploy. This is what this is, Rob. Don't get too excited because the serious folks know that Howard hates podcasting. He knows Carolla's a podcaster. To have him think that Carolla's going to come in and replace Stern, Stern's going to go, no effing way. It's going to happen. So,
Todd. There's other little tidbits here before you start moving down that path. Mr. Carolla sold his house in L.A.
What?
Yeah, and he's looking at a place in New York. So it's not quite as simple as that. Plus, this isn't the first time he's talked to satellite radio because I know firsthand. This came up like about a year ago. Adam's about making some money, so if he can get a big paycheck out of SiriusXM, he'll probably do a show over there.
So where would Howard go then? He's thrown to the curb. I can't believe they would throw him to the curb.
I don't know. I think there's a perception that maybe Howard is a little less relevant now to the next generation audience that the Sirius wants to appeal to, which was the podcaster crowd.
Yeah.
So because of, this could be a negotiation ploy on the part of SiriusXM, but just the fact that Adam sold his home in LA and he's looking for a place in New York City is a pretty significant sign that, that's a big change for Adam.
Mike says in the chat room, he says he sold his place and bought a place next door.
Oh, did he?
He could do satellite from his studio, which is true.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, that could all be true. I don't know. Wow. It doesn't say anything that I've read about him buying a new house in LA, but it's certainly possible. And then the other thing that happened is I guess Donald Trump appeared on the Larry King podcast for Podcast One.
Wow, there's a relevant podcast.
But you know, if you put it on the, you know, the scale of what's happening in the presidential campaign, he's the number one front runner, and he just now appeared on a podcast.
Well, so. Rob, you should call Trump's people and get the Howard on the show.
So it was just posted on the 22nd, so just a couple days ago. If you wanted to go check it out, it's on the back and forth with Sean and Larry King. I actually launched that podcast when I was working at Podcast One, and I guess he's a guest on there for 44 minutes.
Wow!
So
I tell
you're a fan of Mr. Donald Trump. You know, he's on a podcast.
That's funny. Now, Barry, what do you think about Stern? Maybe getting shown the door.
Well, I think that's an interesting development, and you know, great for Adam Carolla. You know, good for him.
Yeah,
I think Adam was good for the podcasting space, and you know, hopefully, he stays in it.
Yeah.
Oh, I think he will. I don't think he's going to kill off, but there was discussion in this article that I saw about him maybe. You know, him and Dr. Drew maybe parting ways on doing a show together going forward into the future. So I don't, you know, it's a little bit up in the air about what's happening with all this. There's a lot of speculation.
I think it's XM's ploy to get Howard to come down price.
Could be. You know, Howard has a lot of choices in front of him. You know, he could go the route that Adam did, but. you know, they could change places, sorts.
But I don't, you know, Howard's going to take a pay cut. Yeah, I don't think he's going to, because he gets huge, huge money from.
Yeah.
From XM. Yeah.
Well, Adam, it's not like Adam was making chump change.
No, but he's not making it. He's making maybe a tenth of what Howard was making.
Yeah, because, well. Howard got a bunch of stock from SiriusXM, which I'm sure isn't going to go away.
Well, I think he was getting paid like something ridiculous, like $70 million a year or something like that at XM. Well,
it's not that far off from what Carolla's making.
I would be shocked if Carolla's making.
Carolla doesn't make all of his money directly from his podcast.
Right.
He makes it from all the other media that he does. But his foundation of what he built is built on his podcast, just like Chris Hardwick. The foundation of all the success that Chris Hardwick has today is based on his podcast.
Yeah. Well, I still, you know, Carolla is not making anywhere near the money as Stern is. There's no way. But I don't know. We'll see. Interesting move. I don't know. Does Carolla have the chops to replace Howard Stern? Wow, that's some pretty big shoes to fill, in my opinion.
I think he does, but, you know.
I guess, you know, I like Stern, and I don't listen to Carolla, so maybe it's an age thing, too.
Well, I guess Carolla goes on his show a lot, I guess.
Hmm.
He's on there quite regularly.
Yeah. Well, interesting times, but it is curious about, that would be so funny if Howard ends up being a podcaster. After
here's a good show. Trump, Carolla, and Stern.
Someone would be dead within the first 3 hours.
And just kind of throw Rosie O'Donnell in there for
good
controversy, right?
Oh, man.
It can be the sidekick.
Oh, no.
You know, like the Robin Quivers, that can be Rosie O'Donnell.
That would be the World Wrestling Federation of Radio.
You would hear Rosie boom shooting Trump, and then you would hear Carolla and Howard Stern duking it out, you know, fist fighting it. Oh man, I don't know, boy oh boy. Well, interesting times in the podcasting space. So you know, that type of news is good news.
Yeah, well,
you know,
I I would think that Corolla is not going to exit the podcast side, but I guess it's the kind of what kind of contract is he going to get into with Sirius too? You know, it gets back to the earlier conversation that we were having, right?
Control.
Yep.
Yeah. What will he be limited to do? Stern will never go back to radio because he's had too much freedom on satellite.
Yeah.
You know, he can drop F bombs and have naked chicks in the studio and talk about inappropriate things that you can't do on, you know, he would be off the air because the FCC would fine him into oblivion.
Yeah, I guess his contract expires at the end of the year. There's been no announcement of his return. And I guess the message board, I guess the Stern fan network, abruptly closed 2 months ago.
Wow.
Sirius XM just can't go on without a flagship entertainer. Opie and Anthony show, which lost wind in its sails with the firing of Anthony Kuma, which I think, didn't he come back and start a podcast? I think he's doing a show on his own now, a podcast.
I don't know.
Yeah, but all those satellite radios and all those cars aren't going to go away. There's millions of cars out there. I have it in my car.
Well, they might go away if people cancel their $9.95 subscription.
Well, that's only good, but the technology is integrated into millions of cars. Yeah. So it's their game to lose based on content, I think, at this stage.
Which, by the way, is not available here in Hawaii.
Yeah. Oh, it isn't?
No, the only way I can get XM Sirius is if I listen via the web. So Barry, that'd be an interesting change to the guard, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would.
Hmm. Yeah.
So, listen for Corolla on XM Sirius.
And I also noticed that Coke has now created a podcast in partnership with iHeartMedia to target teens.
Oh, how? What's their topic?
Let's see here. It's a branded content deal with iHeartMedia. The beverage giant has worked with iHeartMedia many times in the past, I guess.
So did they pick someone interesting, or have they got a spokeshole that is doing the podcast? So
the podcast is targeted at teens. It's the iHeartRadio First Taste Friday with Coca-Cola is the name of it. First Taste Friday is what the show is called.
Huh. But I'll be honest with you. My kids are not listening to iHeartRadio. You know, my kids are tuned into Pandora, Spotify. They're listening to their own mix. Mm-hmm. You know, iHeartRadio, it has the word radio in it. That is not cool. People don't
know. Well, yeah.
So,
true.
You know, my kids are like, your radio. You know, that's the AM talk radio show thing. No, they don't listen to radio. So,
yeah.
I'll ask. I'm going to ask my daughter if she's ever heard of iHeartRadio. Because, you know, we don't necessarily talk about iHeartRadio in the car.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a podcast, so it's going to be.
Yeah.
But I guess it's also going to be available on terrestrial radio stations as well, I guess. It's just a branded content play is what it is with Coca-Cola.
Yeah.
What it looks like to me. Storytelling is what they're saying that they're going to do in it, which I'm not sure what that implies.
Yeah.
But it'll be interesting. I guess it premieres on Friday.
So, well, we'll see who the host is, and we'll see if it's a bunch of giggling girls.
Yeah. I'm looking at a photograph of it, and it looks like a combination of young people all together talking.
So probably very scripted, though, I'm sure. If it's anything from Coke, it's going to be, I don't think it's going to be freewheeling discussions. Might be.
Yeah.
But
yeah. It's we'll have to listen.
It's going to, you know, these companies are, and I appreciate that they're coming into space. The question really will be is, can they get out of their big media model? So here again, Coke, who did Coke choose to do that with? They chose to do this with iHeartMedia or iHeartRadio. So,
well, it's because they've got all those radio stations, right? I mean, a lot of the big brands are still, as you know, Todd, they're still plugged into the radio stuff because right. there's hundreds of millions of people listening to radio. So there is a strong still, radio still controls a lot.
But they're not, but teenagers are not listening to radio.
That is true. That's why they're creating teenage content, right?
But on iHeart.
Appeal to that.
But on iHeart Radio. So it just makes me show they still don't get it. You know, in my opinion, if they'd have made a bigger impact, if they had come on, you know, and developed a brand, developed the show, launched it, you know, it's
well, they probably just should have called it iHeart. It's what they should have called it. I mean, and just not even use the brand name radio.
Well, not even, it's not so much the app. It's like, you know, they have to go to iHeartRadio to get this program where they should have just had it on a site that they launched and been able to put it in iTunes and made normal just, you know.
Oh, no, I think they are going to do all that. It hasn't said that they're not going to. It's a podcast. It's not going to be just only available off of iHeart.
Yeah, we'll see where it's buried. It's going to be buried on some site. It's not. We'll see how they do it. I'll be curious.
They're calling it a podcast, and I agree with you. There's a little bit of confusion sometimes around people's perception on what it means to call yourself a podcast.
I can hear the iHeart guy. Oh yeah, we'll make it a podcast. This will be really hip.
But it's only going to be available off iHeartRadio, right?
Right. Yeah. It's not a podcast.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Barry, are you concerned too? You know, we're seeing, I guess maybe we shouldn't be concerned. Distribution is good. Where you can get the content is fine. And the genesis of podcasting is not going to change. But do you have any concern about the shift in media consumption and affecting, you know, I think it's just going to be better for all of us in the end. I don't know.
Well, yeah, from my point of view, podcasting has always been better for all of us because I can choose what I want to listen to when I want to listen to it.
Right.
And one of my big frustrations now with both television and radio, with this frustration, I want to, you know, add that, you know, I know people have to make money, but damn, there's so many ads.
Right.
You know, I spend my life listening or watching these ads, and, you know, it seems like there's more now than ever. And that's quite often I'll just walk away from a radio station or a television show and come in and listen to a podcast because I can get information and I don't have to sit through half the time I'm spending in the advertising world.
Yep.
There's a lot of pressure on a lot of these big radio networks to generate revenue because they're in so much debt because of all the consolidation that happened over the last 20 years.
Yeah.
So that's putting a lot of pressure on those guys to monetize like crazy. And that's why you're seeing what you're seeing today. And I think this pressure that podcasting is providing to the industry is challenging their survival modes. I think at this point, I mean, if they move more towards podcasting, their revenues are probably going to tail off and they're not going to be able to keep servicing their debt.
Well, you know, it seems to me to be self-defeating behavior to have, you know, most of your content on a radio or television show turn into advertising and the valuable content, what the consumer wants to really see is becoming less and less, and then you're shooting yourself in the foot because that's going to drive people to podcasts.
Yeah. Oh, and Todd, before we move on, I don't know if we want to mention that we're all trying to work with the NAB to pull something together at that event for podcasting, which hasn't existed before. And also, we saw an email come out from the New Media Expo folks with the virtual ticket. Right?
It did. Rick came out and basically said he's been dealing with family issues. He's been disconnected even from his business staff. He apologized. The virtual ticket was still not ready to be delivered.
Yeah, I wasn't able to log in.
So I think this was, I'm alive, I'm sorry, but there wasn't a lot more, to that. Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know what's happening. I sent an email to Rick, invited him to come on the show. I said, listen, you know, the podcast community is forgiving and is wants to see you succeed, come on and do a dump. And Rick, if you're listening, the offer is open. Come on the show and just tell us what's going on. And I think everyone understands, you know, people have family challenges and business challenges from time to time. And maybe you don't want to air everything, but you're more than welcome to come on the show and talk to us. We're friends, and we're not going to beat you up. Matter of fact, you'll probably get more of a sympathetic ear from us than a lot of the podcasters. But I think it's important as you guys are moving forward and making your plan, and if you're regrouping and going to move the show or whatever you're going to do, we just need to know.
Yeah. But in the meantime, we're trying to get in with NAB to establish podcasting as kind of a foothold in that that event as well, in that organization, because we think it's important to have a presence there for this medium, since there's a lot of radio people coming into this medium and we need to have a voice over there.
So anyway, we're going to be submitting some sessions. They actually sent, I think everyone that has ever been to NAB got a submit speaker session email. I know that everyone on my team did.
Yeah,
so,
I got one too. Yeah.
So we're going to see if we can move them a little bit. But I'm still not convinced that they're specifically going to offer up any sessions for us. But the least we can do is ask.
Yeah, it is getting a little close to the event in reality as far as time, lead time.
Yeah. And
it's April, right? April 16th or 17th through the 21st, I believe.
Yeah, I don't have the dates in front of me, but it's something in that range.
You talk about, 6 months, five months, something like that?
It's coming fast. This whole year's been like on hyperdrive. I'm just hard to believe it's almost November here. Where was something I was going to say, but I lost my train of thought. It's going back to that other stuff. I guess it doesn't matter. You know, I think this, from what I'm seeing, based on, you know, my phone's still ringing off the hook, which is a good thing. From corporate people wanting to talk new business opportunities. There's lots of stuff coming. We've got two or three major things going to be popping here in the next couple of weeks. So I think what I'm excited about is that even though there might not be a huge amount of news right now, I think there's a lot of news coming.
Yes.
We'll leave it at that. And from a variety of parties, for a better word.
Yes. One big one, but yeah.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's good. I think that the space needs to continue to be not necessarily shook up, but keep moving forward and legitimized. And the space isn't going anywhere anytime soon. We just need more, and for a better word, we need to take care of the folks that aren't the 1% podcasters. We need the 99% of the shows that are out there that are struggling and trying to reach an audience and trying to pay a few bills. We need to close that gap, and then I think we will really start to solidify the space.
And I haven't heard a final launch date for season 2 of Serial yet. They seem to be still a little bit cagey on that. I don't know if you've heard any dates.
I have heard nothing.
So yeah, but it's been quiet.
But, you know, everyone's, you know, there's a lot of, I think if it doesn't happen this year, next year, I think we're going to see an explosion of content. And there's just a lot of irons in the fire for new shows and people trying to break out. They're going to be competing for, I hope, more ears. I hope all this explosion of content is going to drive a lot more audience. And that is still remains the thing that we need. We need every American listening to one or two podcasts a week.
Yeah. And if we can get Howard Stern to become a podcaster, that would help, wouldn't it?
You know, that would It's just, you know, it's just funny after all the stuff that he's, all the smack he's talked. And, you know, he had to do, it's part of it is his business too, and to protect his show. So, yeah, of course, he's going, podcast, bunch of amateurs, you know. Who wants to be on a freaking podcast? You know, that's for hours. You know. So, you know, then, you know, when the chips are down, you can't go to radio. You're off satellite.
And you've beat up your only other alternative medium. Yeah.
Where do we go? Well, maybe we should try this podcast thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Or you retire, and I don't think he is in the retiring mode. He's not that. He's in, what is he, in his 50s? Or I don't even know how old Howard Stern
is.
Yeah,
probably. No, I think he's 62. I think the article that I saw. Yeah, Stern is 62.
The Botox and plastic surgery's done him well then.
Yeah. And I think Corolla is like 10 years younger than he is.
Well, he's no spring chicken either.
No.
Corolla definitely looks younger than Stern, though. That's for sure. He's got that youthful, a good youthful appearance still.
He does. He's good genes. Well preserved.
Unlike the rest of us, we're, a little dragon. few more lines.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, it's just amazing. Like it was last week. I was 18. You know, it's like, how does this happen?
Thank God I'm not 18 though. I don't want to be 18 again.
Oh, I'd love to be 18 again.
Oh, hell no.
Oh, yeah. And know what I know now? Oh,
oh yeah, you bet.
Well, that's a whole other discussion. Back to the future, right?
You know. I try to bestow some of this knowledge on my soon-to-be 18-year-old. You know, and he's just looking at me like, I don't get it, Dad. And I'm like, you won't get it till you're 50, dude. But trust me.
Yeah, it was funny, all of the news coverage and media about the Back to the Future date from off of the 21st.
It was over the top.
Yeah, and how Nike announced
the
automatic lacing up of the tennis shoes. Yeah.
Yeah, I just thought it was, I thought it was cool. You know, it goes back to our generation and that movie. And my kids are like, what's the big deal on this, Dad? I don't get it. And I'm like, see? You know, you market. Yeah. They were marketing to you and I and Barry. They weren't marketing to my kids.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Marty McFly, who's that?
Yeah. But anyway, we're already here at the end. Barry, any final things here before we bust out of here on the podcasting space and where you think we're headed?
No, unless you want more disclaimers, I'm good.
Can always use more disclaimers.
I'm sure.
Well, we appreciate you coming on, Barry. And I will say, as a disclosure, Barry is not. If you want legal help, I don't think you're looking for business, Barry. But talk to your local attorney, right?
Yeah, you know, I'm happy to answer general questions, but boy, if it gets much deeper than that, you know, you should go find somebody local.
Yeah. What is your? You want to give them a contact email?
Yeah, it's legal at rawvoice.com where they can contact me. And, you know, if you have I want to help podcasters. You know, that's been my goal for a long time. And if you have something really general that's on your mind that you want to ask, hey, go for it. I'm happy to do it.
We appreciate you coming on and not having to get billed for the time. That's fantastic.
I'm not billing you?
You can build a company, I guess.
Also, Todd, I did see that it was mentioned online that Corolla is building a new, what he's terming an envelope house in Southern California. I have no idea what an envelope house is, where he could do a show live over ISDN.
Oh.
So, anyway. I don't know, Barry, do you know what an envelope house is?
No, I'm sitting here trying to figure it out. I'm thinking, well, it's a house you can send somewhere?
I don't know.
That's what you do with an envelope, but, you know, I don't know.
Or just a small house. I don't know what that...
There's a whole tiny house movement. If it's a tiny house.
Oh, okay. It says, an envelope house is a passive solar house design which collects solar energy in a solarium.
Oh, wow.
That's enclosed.
That's a definition that I just found of an envelope house.
That's kind of weird. I guess we'll see. But they do all kinds of weird things like that in LA. So,
well, you got a lot of sunshine down there.
Yes, you do. Got a lot of sunshine here. And by the way, it's another topic for another show, but the Public Utilities Commission in Hawaii has completely flipped the middle finger to all of its residents. And now that they've destroyed the net metering agreement, meaning that when people put solar on their houses today in Hawaii, they're going to have to about double the number of panels to zero their bill based upon what we pay them and what they pay us. So it's not a good time for the green industry in Hawaii and solar. All I'm thankful that I'm grandfathered, but I've made a decision. I'm about 500 kilowatts to the positive right now, Rob, for the year.
Wow, awesome.
My anniversary month doesn't happen until like March, but I've made the decision whatever I'm, because if I'm running a surplus with the power company, I don't, they keep it. And based upon this new net metering agreement, I'm going to run a extension cord or two to my neighbors, and I'm going to let them burn off my, my excess so that, we end up at the end of the year with two big goose eggs, 0-0, and that way the electric company doesn't at least get any penny from me while they're totally screwing the new solar customers in Hawaii. So well,
now here's my concern for you, Todd, is if you have a buyer for your house, if you ever want to sell, are they grandfathered as well?
I don't know. I really don't. It's bad. And basically what the agreement they made was like it's 36 cents a kilowatt is what normal people are paying. But the way they made it, set it up, was that everyone that has solar will pay the utility company 26 cents for the power that they get from the utility company, and the power we send back to the utility, we're going to pay, we're going to get 15 cents from the utility. So you have to generate more power to zero your bill out here. So it's a total travesty. It really is. And they increased the monthly connection fee. So the monthly minimum connection fee I pay right now is $18.40. They're raising it to $25. So in the end, the consumer is getting screwed on this deal. And the new owner that's coming in, which is a Florida company, which is absolutely anti-solar, is basically, in my opinion, lined the pockets of the Public Utilities Commission. But here's what's going to happen now. People are so pissed off here they're going to spend the extra money, and they're going to bring in, you know, hopefully Tesla's battery technology, and they're going to charge their batteries during the day and run their houses at night and pull from the utility as little as possible, just because of this disparity. It's truly heinous what has happened. And I vow never to give HECO a penny of power excess back to them.
Wow. Speaking of Tesla, their stock kind of went down quite a bit this past week with the Consumer Reports downgrading their rating of the Model S.
Yep.
But anyway.
Yep. Anyway, I went off the rails.
It's not a podcasting topic.
So everyone, thanks for being here. You can send an email to Todd or Rob at newmediashow.com. I'm on as at Geek News on Twitter. Rob?
Rob Greenlee on Twitter, and Rob at newmediashow.com, or Rob at robgreenlee.com. You can send it there as well.
Based on my travel situation, there may not be a show next Saturday. I won't know until mid-next week what's happening. Okay. I've got some crazy stuff going on over the next 3 weeks, which may take me out even on the weekends. I won't really know until next week when I'm talking with the vendor, but, we'll just plan accordingly. And, Rob, maybe it'll end up, we're doing a weird hour, you know, a show at weird hours or something. I don't know. We'll have to figure it out. Maybe on Blab or something.
Yeah. Are you going to be, completely gone from Hawaii?
Yes, I'm going to be out of the state. I'm going to be on the in several locations on the East Coast.
Okay.
So,
I'm going to be back on the East Coast the first part of November myself. But
you're going to be in D.C. yet, right?
I'm going to go back there at the first week in December, and then the first week in November, I'm back in Detroit at the Dash Conference.
At the Dash Conference, yeah. Try to get Angelo to go to that, but I don't think he had a lot of interest. So,
yeah.
Okay.
Interesting. All right. But yeah, I don't foresee any conflicts for me on doing the show on a Saturday, but you know, it's, I'm also able to do it, you know, other times as well. And if we want to use Blab or whatever, we can do that.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. And everyone, thanks for being here, and look forward to being back with you. When I am able. And again, this is all on me. It's just something unexpected's come up, and through November 20th, my schedule's crazy. But thanks, everyone. And we'll see you. And Barry, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, you're welcome. And thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks, Barry.
And for everyone else, we'll see you next time here on the New Media Show. Everyone, take care.
Bye, everybody.